Welcome to this podcast from KUOW Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this episode, what did you do this past Earth Day to honor and preserve the planet? Author and activist Bill McKibben is all for us buying electric cars and putting up solar panels, but
we're so far behind the eight ball that at this point, it's very important to do those things, but if you only have a given quanta of energy or time or money, the most important thing to do is be powerfully politically engaged, because these are structural and systemic problems above all. And if we change those structures around them, then we have some real chance of changing behavior and consumption patterns on a big enough scale to matter.
McKibben says the most important thing an individual can do is join with others to make big change. In this excerpt, we're presenting the Q&A from McKibben's recent talk at Town Hall Seattle. You can hear the full talk on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thanks to Jenny Cecil Moore for our recording.
Hi, Bill. My name is Afrin. I am from the Women of Color Speak Out Group. My question is about carbon markets and carbon taxes. We have seen how indigenous people are pushed off their lands, like in the Amazon, by the Nature Conservancy, so that corporations can continue to pollute or rich people can offset their second car. Do you support carbon markets? Also, Carbon Washington is a revenue-neutral carbon tax that hurts the poorest of people. Do you support revenue-neutral taxes?
I gather... from what little I know about it, that there's lots of debate in Washington between different groups about different kinds of carbon prices and things. I got to say, I think that probably this is one of these things that you better get everybody on the same page on before you push it. That one of the things that's been most important in this movement in general has been trying to keep some kind of powerful unity together. And so if you're going to do it in a way that everybody can deal with and work on. Do I think that fossil fuel industry should pay a price for the damage that carbon does in the atmosphere? I do. I think it's crazy that we let them be the only industry on Earth that gets to throw out their waste for free. I think that's the greatest perk, benefit, privilege we ever gave the fossil fuel industry, and I'd love it to end. But it needs to end in a way that really works for people. So that would be my sense of things.
Hello again. First off, I just want to remind people that climate change is a racism problem, because if you can bet if the global north was affected like the global south, they would have done something about it. But because it's only black and brown people dying at the millions, and because our lives don't matter, climate change isn't addressed. I also have to remind you that it is not people of color job to teach white people about racism, and it's not people of color's job to get along with you all. White people created racism, so you guys are responsible to dismantle this mess. On that note, it was the white colonizing countries of the global north that came into the global south, stole their oil resources, colonized their countries, and essentially destabilized them. Now that the colonizing countries are more stabilized through their theft, the formerly colonized are left vulnerable to climate change. The colonizing countries are most responsible for climate change, and for this reason, reparations are owed from the global north to the global south. On top of this, the global north owes it to open up their borders to the climate refugees. I'm wondering if you support the reparations and the opening of the borders.
I think that one of the most important things that should have happened at Paris and only happened in small measure so far was just what you talk about. We need real transfer of resources north to south for two reasons. One is justice and the other is pragmatism. We need the countries of the global south to be able to leapfrog the fossil fuel age and go straight to the renewable age. And it's possible for that to happen now, but it's going to take resources to make it happen. And so far, those resources haven't been made available. It's not possible for us to simply say, well, we filled the atmosphere with carbon, now you guys figure out something else to do, okay? One of the things that should be said is that increasingly there's real leadership coming from nations in the South, especially around renewable energy. I talked about some of what you're seeing in China. One of the real, maybe the at this point even more important test case is going to be what happens in India in the next little while. And I think that there are some very good signs and some very tough signs. The Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, campaigned on the corporate jet of the Adani Corporation, the biggest coal company in India. Okay, there's fossil fuel politics there just like there is every place else. On the other hand, the air quality has gotten so bad in cities in India. I was just in Delhi. Half the children in Delhi, 2.5 out of the 5 million children in Delhi, now have irreversible lung damage because of what they're breathing. Okay, think about that for a little while when you think about climate justice, when you think about what this means. That's the other reason that we should be working extremely hard to make sure that they have the resources necessary to make that leap. It's a sunny country. Solar panels are cheap. With the right help, they could really make that leapfrog. But so far, it's not coming. The U.S. committed to a very small sum of money, $500 million a year in public money, to go do this, which in the context of what we need to do, I mean, $500 million is like the kind of money that you give the potato chip council, to subsidize marketing programs and stuff. It's not what you do to get whole sections of the world onto renewable energy. And even that $500 million has been, of course, held up in Congress by people who are unwilling to see it appropriated. So there is huge work to be done here, and it's one of the really important parts of that work, and thank you for reminding us about it.
Hi, Bill. This is Yin with the Woman of Color Speak Out also. I think as a person of color, I share a different perspective on how the environmental movement approaches is currently going. And so as a woman of color, I don't feel safe or heard in the mainstream environmental movement. And how do you think, or what do you think the movement needs to do to fix that or change that?
I think that the movement needs to reflect everybody. And that's how we've tried to, that's how it's increasingly organized all over the world, which is a really good thing. And it's one of the things that we've long thought in the United States was that we had all the answers to everything and everybody else around the world should emulate us and we'd figured it all out and the rest of the world wanted to do it. Well, it just turns out that that's not true, really. And across a huge variety of questions, including ones about diversity and inclusivity, there's all sorts of parts of the world that have figured out how to do things in really powerful ways. I think that many of the models of kind of the environmental movement that we've had for a long time are shifting and need to shift. We were talking about this earlier. The old model was it was sort of like our power system, okay? We had a few big centralized environmental groups, and they were good, and they're noble people and hardworking people and whatever, but that was sort of where the power and the energy and whatever was. In the same way that we want a grid with 10 million solar panels on 10 million roofs, all interconnected, everybody producing and consuming. That's the kind of political action we want too, with everybody being able to play a real and serious role. That's why we set up 350 the way we did, and you saw as they flashed by as sort of just a tiny sampling of the kind of ways that people have engaged all over the planet. Part of that meant at 350 that it was sort of the kind of opposite of how things are usually organized. Like, we had no intellectual property. There's 350 Seattle, okay? But it isn't actually like a part of there's like some official thing, in that sense. It's like control, it's just rose up, and the same thing in Kuala Lumpur, and the same thing in Kathmandu, and the same thing in a million other places. Everybody just taking responsibility. And so look at those things that are happening in other places and figure out how to emulate them with the same kind of diversity, the same kind of spread outness that gives everyone a chance. That would be my as good as I've got. But as I say, I mean, at some level, what the hell do I know? I'm a writer. We've been completely making it up as we go along at 350, and one of the good things about the world we live in is that there's lots of room to kind of make it up as we go along, so go for it, and thank you for your work.
Hi, my name's Carol, and I was struck by that photograph right there.
Yeah.
Where are the warships from?
The warships?
Yeah, do you know where
Just
various countries?
It's always hard to tell with shipping. Theoretically, ships always get registered in, Liberia. But probably most of it's going to Asia, or was.
These are just cargo ships or
ore ships. This is coal. Yeah, okay. Huge quantities of coal.
I just happened to thought you might have the answer as to why no one is talking about cutting the defense budget of this country.
Well, I think people are talking about cutting the defense budget. I think that's one of the things that my old friend Mr. Sanders has been talking about assiduously. And it's a good idea. And you get a sense of how good idea it is when you look at places. Last year, for the first 6 months of last year, Costa Rica produced all the power that it used renewably, okay, every last bit. And one of the reasons is that Costa Rica does, the one country in the world doesn't have an army, okay? So, they have more money to do stuff with, than we do. So I think it's an important thing to do. One of the great things about living in Vermont is, we get to assign a great many tasks to Bernie to take care of for us, And you need to make sure that, Maria Cantwell and people are talking with just as much passion. And I mean, she's been doing some good things, but Bernie is demonstrating how to be on fire about stuff, okay? And it's amazing. One of the things I was sort of trying to say before, and I think this goes for the Sanders campaign, it certainly went for what we're doing at Keystone, everywhere else. It's weird, but often when we fight, we win. And that means that we should fight more of the time, okay? We shouldn't just give up in advance because the other side's too powerful or too many advantages or too entrenched or whatever else. It's never easy. I mean, and it's much harder than it should be. No one should have had to go to jail to stop this foolish pipeline, whatever. But when we fight, we win sometimes, which if you think about it, it's a good sign.
Well, the woman who asked about the nuclear weapon, I mean, about the military budget, one thing that isn't being talked about much is the fact that the U.S. is going to spend $1 trillion in the next few decades to completely modernize the entire nuclear weapons arsenal, and with Russia and the U.S. at odds over Syria and the Ukraine and things like that, I just wonder if the nuclear weapons could get us before climate change does.
Go for it. I confess too, just as with Bernie, like the large part of me that like shirks responsibility, like I've, you know, I don't have any more hours in the day. So someone else is going to have to figure out some of, you know, the movement building around some of this stuff. And it's possible to do. I mean, we started 350.org with myself and 7 college students. We had no money and no whatever. There were 7 college students. There were 7 continents. Each one took one, okay? The guy who took the Antarctic also had to take the internet, you know? Our job was to find people like ourselves all over the world and turn them into the leaders of all of this, and it proved possible, so you can do it around any number of things. Doesn't do any good to talk about it. Better try and do it if you want something done about it.
So my question is, what about the other side of this? I can protest against fossil fuel, and I have, but I drive a car. I don't have much of an option. How do we address the consumption as well as the protest?
Right. It's a very good question. That was where... It's really where the environmental movement started with trying to deal with climate change, and there was a kind of 10-year period when a huge amount of the focus was on light bulbs and on and on and on. And it's all really important. Like, you should see my house. It's covered with solar panels, and we had the first hybrid electric Ford in Vermont, and I spent an entire year, literally, we didn't eat a single thing that didn't come from our valley. You know, we still are basically local everything, all of that. It's all really important, and I also try hard not to fool myself that it's doing very much about climate change. At this point, given the time that we have, if we had 50 years or 75 years, by far the best strategy would be to do exactly what you're suggesting. To work on our own consumption, model things, other people would see it. You'd put solar panels on your roof, your brother-in-law would come over for Thanksgiving, he would see them, he'd, you know, on we'd go and we'd make. We're now, we don't have, not only don't have 50 years, I mean, we had to start 25 years ago if we really wanted to get this. We are so far behind the eight ball that at this point, it's very important to do those things, but if you only have a given quanta of energy or time or money, the most important thing to do is be powerfully politically engaged, because these are structural and systemic problems above all, and if we change those structures around them, then we have some real chance of changing behavior and consumption patterns on a big enough scale to matter. So it's really, I don't want anyone to go away with the notion that it's not important to do things in your own life, okay? But the most important thing that an individual can do is not be an individual, okay? It's to join together with other people to make big change. That's what we got to do. Good question. Thank you.
I just want to take a quick second to recognize privilege and environmental racism and acknowledge that we are on Duwamish land right now. So that was all I wanted to say.
Good for you. Somebody else?
Yeah. My name is Stephen. I teach part-time at a community college, and I've noticed in all the discussion about renewables, that there's an amazing thing that's been discovered, and there's almost no talk about it, solar roadways. A little town in the Netherlands built a 70-meter test strip 2 years ago, and exceeding all their expectations, it produced enough power to power 100 homes. And it's affordable, it's off the shelf, it doesn't require any great new technology, and there's an outfit in the U.S. that's working on it. And if you think of the surface area of all the interstates in the United States, if they were solarized, we wouldn't have any kind of fossil fuel or transportation problem. They would produce the electricity not only to power businesses and homes, they would fuel the electric cars. And yet there's not been one word in the major press that I've seen about the potential for solarizing the roadways of the United States.
The good news is that there are, don't wait around always for the mainstream media to, if you go Google it, you'll find an immense amount of good stuff on YouTube and elsewhere about solar roadways. And take it to heart, and then think about what you guys did. You went and put a big roadway underground where no sun can reach it at all, or you're trying anyway. It's not quite done yet from what we hear, but so it's good. We need solar roadways, and on top of them, we need bike paths, and we need buses, and we need, one of the problems, like the deep structural problems that we talked about some of them, racism and imperialism and colonialism, and another one that we don't talk about enough is the incredible level of kind of hyper-individualism under which we operate in a high-consumer society. And that gets heavy in the way of doing a lot of the things we need to do. One of the things that's nice about public transit is it's public. You're on it with other people. So keep thinking about that stuff, too. Thank you.
So I was thinking, since it is a political year and an opportunity to build more support for these causes, do you have any concern that certain candidates like Hillary Clinton have accepted donations from the fossil fuel industry?
Yeah, I got heavy concern. I mean, one of the good things, so here's what I think about politics, okay, about electoral politics. It's one part of this puzzle. It's not like election day. Election day is an important day, and you go and vote, okay, but we have a tendency to go and vote for someone on election day, and then that's the end of what we do. Okay. The next day is just as important politically, and the day after that, and the day after that. So, yeah, I have big, I went and worked pretty hard for Barack Obama, and then I went and helped organize the biggest demonstration against Barack Obama that there was. I'm working real hard for Bernie Sanders, who I love, but as I wrote, the week after I introduced him at his announcement thing in Burlington, I said, but chances are, I'll end up, once he's elected, chained to the gate outside his office, which he would like nothing more of in the world, He's about movements and building. Yeah, taking money at this point from the fossil fuel industry is not okay. This is a rogue industry whose business plan, if we follow it, breaks the planet, all right? And so it's not okay to be engaged with them. And I've been really happy that our crew of mostly young people at 350 Action have been bird-dogging candidates for the last 6 months and asking them questions, getting them on the record. And it's been fun to watch them kind of move people, okay? So all of a sudden, they asked a question with a cell phone up, and it turned out that, it turned out that Hillary Clinton was now against the Keystone Pipeline after all these years. And then it turned out that she was against the TPP trade deal that, she'd helped write, And we're really hoping that maybe it'll turn out that what do you know, she's might be against fracking now, you know, sometime in the next little while, okay? One of the things we do in political season is try to move the window, move the center in the right direction. But God, whatever we do, like the very worst, meanest, cruelest thing to do would be to elect Bernie president and then just walk away. The slogan that he's been using is the most beautiful political slogan I've ever heard, not me, us, okay? And that should be internalized not just for his campaign, but for every kind of movement that we do, not me, us.
Hi, Bill. Thank you so much. It's really helpful to have you come and make your comments. My name's Terry Seuss. I actually am a Seattle native. There aren't too many of us around, and I spent most of my life back in New Jersey. So I'm only here a couple years, and it's very impressive in terms of all the work people have done here. However, it's also very clear after the Delta 5 trial to someone like me who's kind of new back here and trying to connect the dots that we have a target on our back. Washington State has a target on its back by the fossil fuel industry for numerous, numerous projects, which the Delta 5 trial pointed out to us so massively, wonderfully. And the fact that it's an environmental movement right now and not a massive movement of citizens here out to defend what they've moved here for has to change. And it will change, I think, with the Break Free effort.
So make it happen. Washington has a target on its back because, among other things, of geography, okay? You guys have the great burden, but also the great honor of being one of the few choke points by which we can stick the cork in the fossil fuel bottle. Most of the oil and coal is in the middle of the continent, and, you know, whoever God or whoever designed the, you know, Pacific coast made it so that there's not so many places where it's going to come out. You know, there's not that much deep water and there's not. Well, that means that you guys can stick the cork straight in that bottle and by God, you're doing it. They're not going to, if they can't build the port at Cherry Point and they can't build the port at Longview, then they're not going to mine the coal in Montana and Wyoming. It's going to stay underground. All right. So. On it.
Hello, my name is Rick File. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your lecture. And I'm with a new meetup group called Carbon Removal Seattle. And I'm just interested, or I guess I should say we're interested, in your general thoughts on carbon removal.
On what?
On carbon removal from the atmosphere and the economic viability and any kind of new technologies. Thank you.
I think the most useful technologies for taking carbon out of the atmosphere are going to be trees, soil, plankton, okay? And soil is the one where we can do the most to kind of change the stakes at this point. One of the best things that happened in Paris was that soil protection and improvement became a big deal. In fact, as part of the run-up to it, the French Parliament passed a law that incentivizes, they're calling it the 4% law or something, that increase in carbon in French soils of 0.4% each year for the next 10 years. That'd be a lot of carbon. In fact, we think that if we really did everything we could around soil and carbon, we could probably deal with 40 or 50 parts per million CO2, something like that, which, you know, obviously isn't going to solve the problem, and we can't keep pouring more in. I mean, you know, we've got to shut down, but that would help. A lot of Jim Hansen's modeling about what we might do to get out of this is contingent on changes in land use in that way. So I think on the scale we're talking about, those are the things that are likely to scale big enough to really matter in time that matters. That'd be my guess. I think we've Have we exhausted? I feel like I've exhausted you all. You go ahead. You have the last.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Bill. You mentioned that we've at least temporarily shut down the Keystone Pipeline. Mm. Can you say a few words about the importance of stopping the expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline that goes to Vancouver and would increase the number of fully laden tankers going down Boundary Pass and Harrow Straits right in our backyard? In the
That was exactly state. What I was going to say.
Okay.
Just what you said.
I've written a novel about it, too.
You've done it. You're absolutely right. As I was saying before, the importance of Keystone is not that we stopped Keystone. The importance of Keystone is it means we can stop every other one. And trust me, I tried the other day. I was writing a piece, and I was trying to list all just the pipeline, never mind the coal mines, fracking wells, LNG ports, just the pipelines that we're now fighting around North America. And there were a good two or three dozen where people have gone to jail, where people have done, people have done amazing work, and it's really powerful to see it happening. Thank you for your work on that. I was down in Vancouver for sort of first big rally. My job's always to just sort of help show up and kick things off. I got to be in Bellingham, really, for almost the first sort of rally about Cherry Point, and down in Vancouver. I have no doubt that people are going to win these fights. None at all. There are places in the world where I don't know if we're going to win. No doubt that you guys are completely up to the task. It's going to take a lot of work. It always does. But absolutely, you guys are going to win if you fight up here. So thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you, Bill.
That's it for this podcast of Speakers Forum. You can hear the full version on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thanks again to Jenny Cecil Moore for our recording. Tune in again soon for more from Speakers Forum.